Hi, welcome to another episode of the CTO to CTO podcast. Commerce Layer is a headless commerce platform and order management system that lets you add global shipping capabilities to any website, mobile app, chatbot, or IoT device. Today's conversation is with Filippo Conforti, the CEO of Commerce Layer. Piotr and Filippo talk about Filippo's experiences as a Ruby on Rails developer, as well as about implementing global e-commerce for one of the biggest fashion houses in the world, Gucci. They also talk about what makes Commerce Layer unique and so easy to implement for companies looking to go online that don't have the budget or the resources to manage a full stock e-commerce system. They also talk about future plans and innovative technologies that Commerce Layer is currently trying out. Let's begin.
Today my guest is Filippo Conforti, founder of Commerce Layer, a headless e-commerce platform. He started his career as a Python, Java, and then Ruby on Rails developer. Actually, he spent quite a few years as an architect at Gucci.com. Reportedly, it was a custom and pretty monolithic Ruby-based platform. Was it the reason he decided to go full headless founding the new e-commerce platform? I can't wait to ask him about it. Hey, Filippo. I'm so glad you accepted my invitation.
Hey Peter, it's a pleasure. Thanks. It is nice to be here.
Awesome. Filippo, do you remember your first job as a developer?
It was in right after graduating. It was 2004. I worked for a company that was called Space, and we built we were building a product that was about managing museums, and it
museums.
Was Yeah, exactly. Museums.
How do you manage the museum, actually, in a piece of software?
Yeah, it's not the museum management. It's like delivering media to the museum. You know, some like media experiences to the museum.
Gotcha. Expositions and virtual things, multimedia and so on, right?
Exactly. It was very nice. The company is still one of the most popular in Italy, and they power a lot of museums in Italy.
Awesome. What are your key flashbacks about the software development in the early 2000s?
Well, yeah, I remember that as a developer, the feeling was to get some kind of superpowers. You know, you thought that you could build pretty much everything, you know, and I remember that I used to spend very much time brainstorming ideas with my fellow engineers. You know, we could build this other product or this idea. You know, every day was a new idea.
Awesome. So it was like feeling superpowers. You can change everything, right?
Exactly.
You started your Ruby on Rails developer's career around 2007. I remember those years very well. I mean, Rails was hot topic. How it changed the software was built, the way software was built?
Rails was really brought fresh air in terms of simplicity and, you know, especially to build prototypes. Mm-hmm. So it was very easy to create an application, a web application from scratch, and that was the number one reason why a developer approached a framework like Rails. I actually remember Rails, especially for the fact that they brought test-driven development in the core workflow.
Yes.
Before Rails, the test was something optional, something that you eventually did afterward. And with Rails, I still remember the first ebook. It was like Agile Web Development with Ruby on Rails. There was a tutorial, and in the tutorial there was the TDD approach from the very first chapter. So that was I still believe a lot in TDD and BDD.
Yeah, the book was great with Dave Thomas and forward by David Heinemeier Hansen. A lot of people was formed by this book, the process, development process describing this book. And I totally agree with you. You are totally right. The unit tests were part of the scaffolded structure generated by the Rails CLI. So I think it's changed the way people think about the software.
Exactly.
But I also remember that this scaffolding, as great as it was also pretty magician for me. Like, it was a lot of conventions over configuration and this kind of stuff. That's one point. But there is another point. I mean, the simplicity and efficiency of Ruby stack is like there is no free lunch, right? There is a cost. What was the biggest cost of this simplicity for you, especially after building the software for quite a few years? What were your observations and how it involved the development process?
Yeah, so I totally agree with you that there is no free lunch here. And when you start building with RAIDs, you start using scaffolds, and it's all so you know so simple. But I think that many the issue with many RAIDs developers, the problem is that many RAIDs developers didn't know Ruby. You know, mm-hmm. So RAIDs is not Ruby. Ruby is not RAIDs. RAIDs brought Ruby to make it very popular, mm-hmm. But Ruby is different from Rails. Rails is just a Ruby gem. And if you want to be, and if you want to build Ruby on Rails applications at scale, you need to learn Ruby, not just Rails. Gotcha. You know, because it brings the magic and also the velocity. But you need to know Ruby and the optimization, database optimization, everything you do with all languages, you know, with all stacks, is not excluded by a Ruby on Rails stack.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I also noticed that in Ruby on Rails apps, everything is pretty much tightened up. Like, in the end, it's, you know, monolithic architecture, right?
Yeah. By the way, in those years, the monolith made sense to me. You know, you had them. You built a monolith, and if the monolith was built in a good way, you know, it really made sense. Also, the Rails brought APIs mm-hmm. other than you know the test driven development. So when you did a scaffold with a Rails application. You know, you also got different endpoints for APIs, and that was another very interesting thing. But it was still an optional, you know, something that you could eventually add to your application. Starting from Rails 5, if I'm not wrong, there is an API only mode, so you can create a new Rails application that is built to power an API.
Gotcha. Makes perfect sense. When you joined Gucci.com, was it already implemented using this tech stack?
Yeah, it was a Ruby on Rails application. Actually, one of the reasons why I was hired by Gucci in 2011 mm-hmm. was because I was one of the few in Italy who had some experience with the Ruby on Rails. And I actually spent, because the platform was built in the United States, I spent quite a bit of time in New York. Mm-hmm. It was really really cool, to be honest.
Awesome. So it was fully custom software, or was it based on some platform?
Fully custom software. Gotcha. It was a fully, and actually, it's interesting because we followed a Jamstack-like approach because it was not the standard Ruby on Rails application. We used Rails. At least for some pages, you know, for the category pages and mm-hmm. product pages, use Rails as a static site generators, and we deployed the static pages using the populating the dynamic content on those pages through JavaScript. So it was kind of an early Jamstack approach.
Interesting. It was mostly because of the performance.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, I remember that we ran, Gucci.com had a high traffic e-commerce, and we could run it with a couple of really small servers and as the origin servers, and then it was deployed, static pages deployed.
Gotcha, perfect. What do you remember from working on such a huge? In the end, monolithic application, how your job looked like back then?
Yeah, so first it was the experience with Gucci was really exciting because it was like, it looks like a startup environment in a global brand. So I had the possibility to work with a global brand of the likes of Gucci with an amazing team, but the environment was really a startup-like environment. I've learned a lot about enterprise software in general and especially enterprise e-commerce. Because Gucci, you know, had a different, you know, the e-commerce was a global commerce with different regions, and each region had different requirements, and so it was, I really learned a lot about this this aspect of e-commerce, so the internationalization.
Gotcha. Wasn't it a problem for such a, you know, dispersed architecture? I mean, globally rolled out platform with many different forks, customizations, features specific to the markets, and this kind of situations that are, you know, very typical to such an architecture. Wasn't that a tough job at some point to just, you know, deploy the next features? I mean, it was still monolithic, right? So it was a big bang deployment, I guess.
Yeah, it was. It was also, you know, we should be very careful in deploying the next feature because, it was a monolith that powered all the, you know, the international e-commerce website. So
I'm asking such a question because I'm heading towards the headless that, you know, the commerce layer is all about, and I just wanted to better understand the background for this platform. And actually that might be a good next question. Like, was this experience with monolithic architecture pushing you towards headless, or maybe you just were quite happy with this architecture and commerce layer was answering totally different needs?
Well, it actually pushed me to this architecture because part of my job in building the, especially when we replatformed the Gucci.com e-commerce, was to interact with the agency. So there was the marketing team who worked with an agency, a digital agency, and they designed a complete custom experience. And then we had a platform, a backend platform, and in order to make the two layers work together, my role was to interact. You know, I was at the edge of the backend platform, interacting with the agency, and building an API layer on top of the monolith, so that to unleash the creativity and the design that was built by the agency. You know, so that was definitely the moment when, you know, it was not a moment, it was kind of a big project, but I really you know, thought why shouldn't be this way natively? You know, why shouldn't the backend just expose an API so that the front-end developers and the best digital agencies can innovate and can work and can build whatever the customer experience they want.
Gotcha. That makes perfect sense. So let me paraphrase what you said. It's something like the need for headless was mostly to let the front-end folks, the creative team, work on their own pace, not being limited by the back-end development, right? To separate those two concerns.
Yeah, that was the number one driver for sure.
Gotcha. So how did you found the commerce layer? Like, do you remember the day you started the company, or maybe the idea came to you, the founding team? Tell us more about the beginning.
Yeah, so first I tell you a fun fact because the name commerce layer comes from an idea of creating the, like, the 8 OSI model layer, you know.
Okay.
So that Like, and initially it was like a side project of mine. You know, it was an open source project, and they wanted just to build an API for commerce based on the experience that they had. And so trying to create a model, you know, a model was, that made sense and with the, you know, with no assumption, essentially. You know, so this is this was the idea. Then he came to onboard the first client, and I realized that in order to make this project a product, we need to do something different. So I created a backend application, an order management system, so the very first version of the OMS that comes with Commerce Layer today. But the core is still the same. You know, the core of our product is still the same. Commerce Layer is an API. And then we and our developers can build around this, this API to, you know, to create some sales channels, to create some integrations, because, by the way, it's not just about headless, because the headless is, only the front end part, which is, again, number one driver. And it's, probably the most important part. You know, the main benefit of going headless, but it's not just about headless. It's about API first in all directions. Sure. And Commerce Layer is not just, you know, an application, a headless commerce application with, you know, with some front end APIs. Commerce Layer is an API first platform on all directions.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So what's the business model for Commerce Layer?
Yeah, it's usage based. You should think of Commerce. I like to, you know, think of Commerce Layer as an orders machine, you know, and so, it's like when you purchase a bandwidth from a CDN, you get charged by, you know, by the bandwidth of the CDN itself. Our bandwidth is orders. You know, we charge based on the order numbers. We don't go in revenue share because we know from our own experience that especially the larger brands don't like the revenue share model too.
Absolutely.
So it's a usage base. The usage is mainly based on orders. Then there are other metrics, but and again, the number of orders, not the amount of orders, is not a revenue share model.
Gotcha, interesting. And who's the main client? I mean, of course, retailers, other folks entering e-commerce, but on their side, is it like CTO or CMO?
I would say more the CTO. So we are a developer-first platform, and we want to keep this focus on developers because we really think that we really want to become a developer tool, you know, to create e-commerce. And there are so many ways to build e-commerce nowadays. You know, it can be a website, it can be integrating a social channel, it can be integrating, you know, just a form with a Typeform, for example, or a Google form or whatever. You know, so we really want to become a kind of commerce operating system for developers so that they can build on top of our platform. So the CTO, in general, engineers and technical and tech savvy people are more our clients. Then we always, you know, our client, I mean, we signed the contract with the brand, but as a, you know, also as our positioning is more developer first.
Gotcha. Do you think that you need to educate the market? I mean, you said CTOs, developers, they absolutely get your idea and architecture and the benefits, but the folks that are spending money on the retailer side are very often marketing folks or sales departments. They have the budgets. Don't they expect to have batteries included product buying the shop platform? Isn't like this?
They sometimes they do, and this is also so. in general, the promise of you know, of providing a monolith that does everything you need is very appealing, especially to the marketing departments or executives, because they, you know, they have the idea of purchasing one product that does everything and that's it. You know, it's very easy. You know, maybe the cost is higher, but maybe they don't care because they are looking for something that just works. I think that, you know, the history says that, I mean, not the history, because the monoliths, you know, 10 or 15 years ago made a lot of sense. But now they can't live up to the shopping experiences that the brands want to deliver to their customers, also to differentiate. So, I think, yeah, this is the reason why the headless approach is becoming so popular. And to answer your question, yes, we need to educate the market. For sure, the brands, because they know that they need to go headless. Maybe they don't know all the benefits that headless can provide them. I think that we should also help developers understand the headless better, because not all developers are created equal, you know. So in my experience, when a developer approaches Commerce Layer, they get the benefits, they get the API. I mean, we don't even need to explain too much about how we work. They just read the API reference and they try it and they are happy with it, you know, and they already know what to do. But in some other cases, so there are some, especially the bigger agencies that maybe get the benefits, but let's say you are a large digital agency and you have invested in a monolithic e-commerce platform, and you have tens of or hundreds of developers that are specialized in that platform. So it's not just, you know, choosing a technology and choosing an approach means also rethinking your organization, you know, and this is something that can't be done in one shot. It's a process, and for sure, in order to invest in this new approach, they need to really understand what are the benefits and why should they do it, you know. Our role as a company, as a headless commerce company, is to help them, educate them, and help them educate the brands and the market in general.
That's very interesting point of view. I think that absolutely this is going on right now. The way agencies are then selling out their services also changed, because beforehand they were saying something like, you get this, you know, Salesforce, Magento, Shopware, whatever platform, and you have all features included. We can go live in 2-3 months, something like this. Right now, it's more about building the apps, custom apps that are connected to commerce platform, CMS, and different systems. But I have another observation, and I just wanted to confront it with you and check your thoughts, because with this new architecture, the commerce platform, but not only commerce platform, CMSs too, and any other services, are subject to commoditization. I mean, it's like being, you know, a utility company and like powering the electric energy, whatever. You can just change the provider and you have the same service. Isn't it like this with the platform? Is it good or bad that the platform are more commoditized?
That's a very good question. Let me say that it is possible that this will happen in the future. I don't see it happening in the next future. I mean, the next few years. Yeah. 10 years, because you know, swapping a platform, regardless it is about commerce or content or recommendation or search or whatever, you know, so from a customer perspective, it's not a bad thing. You know, there is no vendor lock-in. You can just choose. Yes. You know, you just can swap a piece of your stack, and it's not a bad thing. I think that In the future, it will be, you know, a progress, let me say, to if this will be possible. Again, I don't think this is something that will happen in the near future, because again, in order to do this switch, you know, to a commoditization, sorry, we would need a standard. You know, we really need a commerce layer, and the commerce layer should be a standard. You know what I mean? Yes. I'm not talking about commerce layer to become the new standard. Yeah. I'm talking about some standard. You know, some entity or organizations that could work together to build this new standard, this new interface, so that in change. The platform or change the CMS could become possible. But again, I think this is not something that will happen very soon.
Yeah, that's interesting. By the way, today I saw a Y Combinator startup trying to do something like this, the unification of the e-commerce APIs. Maybe I would be able to invite the founders to interview. Okay, that's perfect. Good discussion. Related to this question, maybe I ask you, what makes Commerce Layer special in that case? Like we have this standardization, let's say, but also we have the whole backend system. We have all the features Commerce Platform is providing. So what's about the USP part of Commerce Layer?
Yeah, so we provide a model which is not a standard, you know. So mm-hmm. It's our model. We try to make it as as generic as possible with no assumption. But the USP of Commerce Layer is also compared to the other solutions in the market. For sure, we are a headless platform. We are an API first platform, and I want to remark this fact. We everything in Commerce Layer is an API. We are not a platform with some API. So mm-hmm. being headless, having some APIs doesn't mean that you are headless. Yes. You can support some. We are headless from the ground up.
You started with the API, in other words.
Everything is an API mm-hmm. with Commerce. So the second thing that makes us pretty unique, I would say, is that we are a purely transactional platform. Mm-hmm. So this means that when you typically start thinking of e-commerce and e-commerce platforms, all of them, Magento, Shopify, even commerce tools, you know, that is headless, mm-hmm. but they manage the catalog-related content, the product-related content. Mm-hmm. So all these platforms consider the content related to the product and to the catalog something that belongs to the e-commerce platform.
Gotcha.
This is why many e-commerce platforms are also called like e-commerce CMSs, you know. In Commerce Layer, you don't find anything about content. So we think that all content belongs to the content management system. So everything in Commerce Layer is linked to some transactional feature. Essentially, a project with Commerce Layer always require a content management system. And the linking part between the content that is managed by the CMS and the transactional, the commerce part, is the SKU code, you know, the some code, that some product identifier. So you can build your content model in the content management system, and again, including your catalog, your categories, product information, whatever your product story is, you know, it's not just a product page. It can be, you know, a storytelling made of some, in any creative way. And then in order to make that content shoppable, you just need to connect it to Commerce Layer. So if it is in Commerce Layer, and if a Commerce Layer has defined the price and availability, that product can be made shoppable through our API. So we really separate the content from the commerce part. And then the third, I would say last but not least, is that also thanks to my experience and the one of my co-founder, Massimo, we met in Gucci. And so working for a global brand, we really had the chance to understand that enterprise commerce and the global commerce is all about localization, you know, yes. localizing the business rules for the different markets. Mm-hmm. Commerce Layer makes it very, very easy to configure different business rules for different markets. So you can have, you know, different price lists, you can have different inventory models, you can have different payment gateways, shipping carriers, promotions, everything is scoped by market. So mm-hmm. if you think, for example, of Shopify, one Shopify account is essentially a single market account because you can have just one price list and one inventory model, mm-hmm. and one merch. If you need to sell in different markets with Shopify, you need to clone, you know, you need to create different accounts, different Shopify accounts, and to keep them synchronized in yeah. some way. So there is a duplication. With Commerce Layer, from a business logic perspective, one Shopify account is mapped to one Commerce Layer market. But mm-hmm. in one Commerce Layer, let me say, instance account, you can have as many markets you want. So we provide this flexibility, and which makes it, you know, which makes Commerce Layer pretty unique in the market.
Gotcha. Does it mean that the same way I manage the markets, I can manage the sales channels? I mean, web page, the e-commerce site is just one of them, right? I can have mobile app, I can have retail store, I can have maybe digital signage, kiosks within my offline shops. All those different scenarios and channels.
Absolutely. So we have these two dimensions. Mm-hmm. So Commerce Layer is both omnichannel, meaning that you can build applications, and the applications can be, for example, sales channel applications, mm-hmm. and you can have, you know, the website, the mobile application, mm-hmm. or kiosk in store are just different applications that consume the same API.
Yeah.
And then we have the markets. So you can think of a matrix, you know, applications by markets. And so you have this two-dimensional matrix, and you have this all this flexibility. You can have many applications, many markets, and all the different combinations. So that you can, you know, you can get orders from one application in many markets, or in a single market from many applications.
Interesting. I really like this idea. Does it mean that I can use it to build 360-degree customer experience, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You can build any customer touch point, which is not, you know, it's not just a website, as we said. So you can really build, and the, one of the things that I like more of Commerce Layer is that I don't even know what, you know, our developers can build with Commerce Layer, also in the future. You know, mm-hmm. we don't really know what the next big thing will be in terms of the sales channel, for example. Like, you know, think of the voice commerce devices, IoT, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Not sure if they will become the next big thing, but in case they could, you know, developers could use the same API, different technology on the client side, but it will be just, you know, another channel for us.
Absolutely. Can you share with us some real life cases, the best cases, the most interesting cases maybe you found on Commerce Layer?
For sure. For now, there are no. We don't have yet some of the most innovative sales channels. Let me say, you know, car. I mean, there are some developers and agencies that are doing some prototypes and mm-hmm. POC to integrate Commerce Layer with the, like, you know, car systems, Alexa, mm-hmm. or you know, this or IoT devices in general, like coffee machine. You know, there is a company that is integrating a Commerce Layer with a coffee machine, but this is just, these are not live yet. You know, we are still at the prototyping, you know, prototyping some of these kind of integration. The real life cases are like kiosk in stores, mobile apps, because, you know, if you want to build a native mobile app e-commerce application, you need some APIs, you know, so there are some mobile apps, and especially apps in store, like iPad in store, for example. You know, so we have some retailers that have a custom-made iPad application in store, and this application consumes the same API, so the Commerce Layer API, and they sell in store through this different interface. And it's also, you know, the sales assistant can sell products in person, you know, but using the same API that are used by the website, so the e-commerce.
Thank you. That's really interesting. We already discussed this a little bit. I'm changing topic from product to let's say process. We already discussed this a little bit, but I'm wondering your thoughts on what makes the development team nowadays with this headless architecture, JavaScript and all the other technologies you need to have, what makes it effective? Who should you have on your development team? Let's say you are building small agency, small web shop, or maybe not web shop, maybe you are, you know, a merchant building your own development team for e-commerce. Who would you hire to this team?
Yeah, I would hire front-end developers. You know, now I think that I remember one of the Jamstack conferences, there was a talk, I don't remember who was the speaker, but regardless, so the title was, you know, oh my God, we as front-end developers, now we are full stack, you know, so
yeah,
because if you are a front-end developer, and if you JavaScript developer in general that use React or Vue or Svelte or, you know, or vanilla JavaScript, using, you know, with the power of APIs, you become a full stack because you have everything you need. So as an agency, you just need front-end developers. I mean, one of the best things that I heard from some agencies is that some of them decided to not build e-commerce at all. You know, if like working with Magento requires a lot of back-end engineers and a lot of effort, I mean, it's really hard to build an e-commerce with Magento. And so that's the reason why many agencies decided to not build e-commerce at all, to stop building e-commerce, you know, and focusing on branding and marketing, mm-hmm. on the marketing part. With this new approach, they can focus, they can build an e-commerce website, for example, just, you know, without the bad bits, you know, without all the hassle in maintaining the backend part, the security and all that part, which is provided by a platform like Commerce Layer or Commerce Tools or other platforms that can, wrap all this complexity for them. So, yeah, I'd say front-end developers.
Gotcha. That's a fair point. I haven't thought about it, but it's absolutely relevant. And the way the headless changed the way we build the software, making it much more easy, much more straightforward, so you can focus on creating the USP for your brand, which is usually front-end, right? And everything else just works because you have web services for that.
Yeah, let me say also that they should have a kind of maker mindset, you know. Mm. So you don't want to like get a platform, purchase a theme and make some tweaks to the theme. You probably want to build something unique, you know. You want to maybe composing your stack with the best of breed tools and then building some Lambda functions, for example, to make a custom flow for some process or to build, you know, a custom front end. So I would say that those developers that you want to hire should have a maker mindset, you know.
Gotcha. Makes sense. And if you were at the position for building the new e-commerce website, let's say you are still working at Gucci. Let's imagine this hypothetical situation. And the challenge is to rebuild the whole eShop. Would it be Jamstack? I'm asking because you mentioned Jamstack a couple minutes ago. I think it's very, very important. I'm just wondering if you see it's suitable for all the cases or not all the cases. What are your thoughts on that?
So, yeah, I'm definitely a big supporter of the Jamstack. And I would try to follow a Jamstack approach as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Let me say that in some cases, SSR makes sense. You know, there are some cases in which you want to evaluate also maybe an hybrid approach, especially when your website is made of, tens or hundreds of thousands of pages. And this is very specific to international e-commerce websites. So if you think of you have, let's say, a 2,000 products catalog and you sell in 30 countries, and you sell in 3 languages on average. So if you want to build all your website, you know, if you want to pre-build all your website and to make it fully static, it's like 180,000 pages, which can, you know, it can become an issue at build time because you don't want your build time to last, tens of minutes. So this is a challenge for sure. And in order to mitigate this issue, you can parallelize, you can first define split the front ends. Because, for example, one approach that I see working very well is if you sell in 30 countries, instead of building one website of that support 30 countries, why don't you create 30 front ends? Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not about 30 cloning the full stack as you do with Shopify, for example, but only having different front end applications, and so this is a way. Another way could be to split the website horizontally, because, for example, you have like your homepage, you have your category page, and you have your product pages. Very often, you don't change the product pages that much. And maybe you want to change the merchandising of your website every day, you know? So maybe you should have one front end for the product pages, one front end for the category pages, for example. And so that you just need to rebuild the category pages website instead of rebuilding the entire website. And other than that, you can work on, on parallelizing the build with more processes and with more resources. But again, this is all things that I'll try to do as much as possible, because if you can if you can build your website on the Jamstack, you really get a lot of benefits. But again, in some cases, I would also evaluate some SSR for some functions of also for some sections of my website.
Gotcha. I recently recorded an interview with Tim Noitkens, leader of Next.js. So he described the ways they handle those scenarios you said. They call it a hybrid. So you can pre-render some pages. Some are dynamic only when the content changes. Very, very interesting episode. So to our listeners, if you gonna get deeper into Jamstack, absolutely you need to listen to that one. Okay, Filipa, I have a few more general questions, if you don't mind.
Sure, please.
So my first question is, I always ask the question to the founders of the enterprise and e-commerce product I invited, and they usually give me totally different answers. So the question is, what's the next big thing in the enterprise software space? It's a very general question.
That's not an easy one. Let me say that at least my goal, as a founder, and I think the next big thing will be to, in general, is a generic answer. So I'm not saying that it's a product or a service, but I would say that the challenge is to bring the simplicity to enterprise software. Mm-hmm. Typically, when you think of enterprise, you think of a synonym of complexity and cost and hard to maintain, something very, enterprise-y means also slow and costly and also legacy. I think that the next big thing in the enterprise software will be to bring the simplicity. So to build something simple to, at the enterprise level. We're already doing that. I mean, not just us. I mean, in the ecosystem, there are some services, very, you know, very cool services that are bringing that simplicity to the enterprise software. And I think this is just the beginning. We really want to make the enterprise software as nice, as cool, as easy as the, you know, not enterprise software, so to say.
Absolutely, there is no reason why it shouldn't be like this. I mean, the enterprise software and Shopify, commerce tools, commerce layer, and all the other platforms are showing exactly this. Like the API can be fun again to work with. The stack is easy, simple. That's cool. I think that's a huge change. And for folks used to work with Java or PHP, whatever, like bunch of XML files, nobody understand, and you know, all this crazy enterprise like stuff. It's a huge change for better. Okay, my last question. If not commerce layer, what other product would you start now in 2020?
That's a nice one. As I told, I never, this is something that I didn't lose from the early 2000s. You know, every day I like to think of new ideas. I don't have one specific, but I think that API aggregators in generally, I probably built some API aggregators. So an API of APIs, you know, vertical with on some, for example, there are some services that aggregate the APIs of shipping carriers, and we are using those services. And I really like those APIs because something that makes the developer life easier and to, you know, to expose one single API that wraps other APIs that are typically legacy. Again, I'm not sure about the, because there are many of those services, but I would probably build something like that.
Awesome. Great idea. Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you, Filippo, for your time. It was great talking to you and looking forward for our upcoming conversation. Maybe we got some comments from you guys so we can answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. It was a great pleasure. And yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the CTO to CTO podcast. And now just a quick reminder. We've been preparing some YouTube playlists so that you can really get the most out of our content. So make sure that you go to our YouTube page and hit subscribe so you don't miss out on that. And see you next week.